Good evening, and may God's blessing continue to grace this service and all that is said and done. It's been a while ago, not sure how long ago I was at a congregation for a week of meetings, and one night the deacon of the congregation stood up and for an opening devotional after the singing was done, and he read a song that I just kind of put in my memory and decided, you know what, if I ever have a chance at a council meeting, we're going to use that song as a potential, just something to add to the message. But the song is based on a Bible story. In fact, the Bible story is given in every one of the Gospels, but the words that I'm planning to use for a title tonight are found in only two of the Gospels as I was able to read them. Now, the thought is contained in at least one of the other Gospels, but the exact words seems like are more clear in Matthew and in Mark. So the title tonight is, Lord, Is It I? Lord, Is It I? And I've been thinking about this question a lot recently, and it's part of all what led me to this title for this evening. And not so much with a focus on that person and that person and that person and that person, the focus on ourselves and specifically on my own life, as Brother Luke already has reminded us, the sacrifice is already done. Jesus' work on the cross is finished. His death, his time in the tomb, his resurrection, his ascension. That's done. That's past. But what is it doing for me today? How is it affecting my life? Or is it affecting my life? What is going on? And how am I actually living that out? How is it working in my day-by-day life? And this has been the challenge for me this in the recent past. And probably, I think I could probably say that as far as feeling spiritual warfare and tough times, in at least with temptation, with forces of wrongdoing, I probably have faced more of that type of battle in the last 6 months than I have for a long time. And I'm still trying to figure out all that's making that. And that's one reason why this message to me tonight is very real, because I realize how susceptible and how weak a person really is. And so I want to open the Bible tonight in Matthew chapter 26. We're just going to read a few verses here with this idea, Lord, is it I? This is the scene of the Last Supper, in the upper room. Jesus had told the disciples to go and make ready. He said, you'll find a man carrying a pitcher, and wherever he's carrying that pitcher down the road, down the street, follow him to his house. And whenever he turns into his house door, you say that the master has need of the room in your house, and the man will let you use his room. Jesus knew that ahead of the fact. I'm in Matthew 26, verse 20. And when the evening was come, he sat down with the 12, and as they did eat, he said, verily I say unto you that one of you shall betray me. And they were exceeding sorrowful, and began every one of them to say unto him, Lord, is it I? And he answered and said, he that dippeth his hand with me in the dish, the same shall betray me. Verse 25, then Judas, which betrayed him, answered and said, Master, is it I? He said unto him, thou hast said. I just don't know how this all was, what all Jesus' thoughts were. I might just go on and read the account in Mark 14. I want to go there yet. Just it's basically this very similar wording, but I just want to get how he says it here in Mark 14, verse 18. And as they sat and did eat, Jesus said, Mark 14:18, And as they sat and did eat, Jesus said, Verily I say unto you, one of you which eateth with me shall betray me. And they began to be sorrowful and say one unto him, one by one, Is it I? And another said, Is it I? And he answered and said unto them, It is the one of the 12 that dippeth with me in the dish. And you see the stunning reality, the stunning thought that somebody was going to betray him. And Jesus said so. He said it's going to happen. And we all know what Peter had already said. It wasn't going to be him that was going to deny Christ. He was going to go with him till the very end, and even until death he was going to go. But Jesus knew better. Jesus knew it already here. Jesus knew what Peter was going to do. He also knew what Judas was going to do. Jesus had some hard announcements to make that evening. Hard pronouncements. That last evening at the Last Supper and the surrounding events. He knew what Judas would do and he spoke of it. He knew about Peter's denial and the reality of it, in spite of the fact that Peter was sure that he would be faithful. And Peter was declaring that he would be. He had promised he would be. But Jesus, as he sat here at this meal that evening, knew what was going to take place. And when I begin to think about it, we can talk about how bad this was, how strange this was. And it made the disciples sad that somebody of their number was going to betray Christ. It made them sad. It says so in both passages. Lord, is it I? And you can imagine Matthew. And you can imagine John and James. And going down the line. And Judas Zelotes. Ask this question. Then Judas, which betrayed him, answered and said, Master, is it I? And he said, Thou hast said. That must have been really, really tough for Jesus to say that. That must have been just so hard. One of the 12, one of the chosen. How could this happen? I was at a revival meeting when I was just barely 21 years old, around there somewhere. And the evangelist said that night that none of us is more than one step from doing wrong. And he said, why then should we be so proud of our good standing, our good spiritual status? Temptation and human weakness is very, very real sometimes. And Jesus, as he looked at his disciples in this famous evening of the Last Supper, knew what was going to happen, as I've already indicated. But Jesus looks around the congregation here tonight, and he sees you and me, and he sees not just everything that's on the surface. That song we sang this evening was a very good one about God's searching eyes and God's looking in our hearts and minds. And God knows what's there tonight. Before we moved to Pennsylvania, maybe about 3 or 4 years before that, our bishop felt that there was some needs in our congregation. And he told us that he didn't feel that God's blessing was upon our congregation like it should have been. And he told us that he wanted us to spend some time as a congregation in fasting and prayer for a period of time. I think it was going to start about a Friday. And then it was decided that on Sunday, we would have a fellowship meal and break the fast that we had started. Those of us, it was voluntary, whoever wanted to. And then in the afternoon, we were going to have a meeting a little bit like this one. But the reason of the meeting was that we were going to say what we felt we have contributed to the lack of God's blessing in our congregation. And I will tell you that because of the intensity of those moments, it was a very soul-searching time for my own life. And I don't know what you would have done in that case, but what I did in that time was I went to our standard book and I went down through every point, and tried to figure out, is there anything here where I'm not living up to what I should be? And at least, if nothing else, it helped me to analyze very carefully and very closely my own need and the seriousness of my life being in line with what God wanted. It was a soul-searching time. And yet it didn't do me any harm. And it doesn't do us any harm to just analyze how our heart is tonight. Lord, is it I? The title of this song is Lord, Is It I? And I'm going to read it. I'm going to make a few comments, and then we're going to go back to the rest of the message. Lord, is it I? Have I a mercenary bent that covets more than you have lent? Dare I forget my soul's release and value silver over peace? Lord, is it I? Lord, is it I? Verse 2. Lord, is it I? Have I indignantly looked on, rebuking lavish love with scorn, when you have looked in vain to see some costly ointment poured by me? Lord, is it I? Lord, is it I? Lord, is it I? Have I denied a mother's plea to see her children on your knee, then wished myself a special place to sit by you and see your face? Lord, is it I? Lord, is it I? Lord, is it I? Would I in some unguarded hour forget my pledge to own your power and then deny it identity with one who gave his life for me? Lord, is it I? Lord, is it I? Verse 5. Lord, is it I? Before I reach the potter's field, before my destiny is sealed, O turn and look me in the face, compel my grief and growth in grace. Lord, is it I? Lord, is it I? That song was written in 2015. It's not a very old song, but the meaning to me goes very, very deep. I want to just go over a few of these thoughts here. Have I a mercenary bent that covets more than you have lent? You know, sometimes there is within us a coveting of things that are not rightfully ours, a desire for that which does not belong to us. And a mercenary is a person that does something with no other reason than that of money. A mercenary soldier is one who is paid, a foreign soldier that's paid to fight a war in a foreign country, not even his own country oftentimes. It's a very unique situation in history. It has happened a few times, but I don't have the proper way to explain it to you. But when a person is working for money only, and the writer here is asking, do I have within me a desire for money that covets more than what God has lent to me? I forget my soul's release and value silver over peace. And that's exactly where Judas was. Judas valued 30 pieces of silver more than peace in his heart. And Peter wanted some temporary reprieve from his predicament, and he denied his Lord. And he valued his reputation. He valued his thinking. He valued his reputation or something. Or at least maybe his physical safety. He valued more than peace at heart. At least he repented and wept bitterly. Have I indignantly looked on, rebuking lavish love with scorn, when we think of what Jesus has done for us? And I was thinking today as I was working about that song, I gave my life for thee, thy precious blood I spent that thou mightst ransom be and quicken from the dead. And then it says, I gave. And then Jesus asks the question, what have I given for thee? What hast thou given to me? And that's the question I'd like us to answer tonight and think about. When we see God's lavish love upon us, behold what manner of love the Father hath bestowed upon us. And then, what does God see? You have looked in vain to see some costly ointment poured by me because I haven't done it, or have I? Have I given my life in service to God's kingdom? Am I willing to go the second mile? Am I willing to do just what Jesus asked me to do? Verse 4 is probably the one that caught me and made me think the most. Would I in some unguarded hour forget my pledge to own your power and then deny identity with one who gave his life for me? Have you ever felt yourself in some unguarded hour? Have you ever felt yourself in some time of weakness? What happened in that time? And then deny identity with one who gave his life for me. Lord, is it I? I've been listening to some messages, most of them in the Spanish language in recent past, and one of the messages I heard not so long ago was all but one and the same, and the brother touched some of the very same points that Brother Lyndon did just a week or so ago, about so run. And talking about the weights. And the thing, and then this evening, I was listening to another message on the way home from work. And the brother was talking about the very same verses out of Hebrews chapter 12. And there's those things which are not bad, but they're not so good either. And our world is full of it. And by the way, our phones are full of it. They're not maybe bad, but they're not really good either. And we spend time and time there. There's weights that beset us and sins. And the brother was explaining that it corrals us, it pens us in. Sin pens us in, and then there's weights that pull us down. And I've just been thinking about that. When I think about some unguarded hour, forget my pledge to own your power and then deny identity with one who gave his life for me. Lord, is it I? How easy it is for us to let pride just pop out in our life somewhere. Selfishness. Selfishness, it's for me. It's all about me. It's about my own interests, my own love. And you know what? Every sin that a person ever has committed is a base. The baseline is pride and selfishness. That's the baseline. That's the starting point. That's the foundation of all sin, is pride and selfishness, and originates with the devil himself. What about laziness? Just too lazy to do what I know I should do. Too lazy to maintain a devotional life. Too lazy to go visit the neighbor that's in need. Too lazy to take the time with the young person that needs some listening ear. Too lazy to spend the time I need to with God alone in prayer. Too lazy to do what God wants me to do. And then the unguarded hours are more frequent, aren't they? When I'm living in pride, selfishness, laziness, carnality just blooms in times whenever devotional life is weak. Lord, is it I? There is always that tendency toward worldliness, and the strongest Christian out there can testify to that. The call of what is forbidden, or at least questionable, the pressures of the evil world, and the possibility of compromising on the small stuff. That extra song. Now, it's just, yeah, it's one of them. Maybe it's not religious, but maybe it's not godly either. Maybe it's not. And then what? There's that possibility of compromising in small things. It seems to me that it is good to realize that there's a possibility of in going astray in some small way, just getting off track a little bit, playing with the edge a little bit, of being tainted with impurity of thought or action. And it's not impossible. It's actually quite easy. And we do well, my dear friends, tonight, brothers and sisters and all, we do well to prayerfully consider how we are before God and how it really looks in the eyes of God. I just want to remind us tonight that Jesus is here to help us with any of these type of issues. I was just blessed as I read back last night in the book of Hebrews again. These verses were also in my mind, a couple that I'm going to read. Wherefore in all things, I'm in Hebrews 2:17. Wherefore in all things it behooved him to be made like unto his brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make reconciliation for the sins of the people. For in that he himself hath suffered being tempted, he is able to succor them that are tempted. Hebrews 2:17 and 18 are those simple verses. He is a person. Jesus was a person. He, in his time on earth, well, part of it was to make him to be a merciful and faithful high priest. Right now, I'm in personal Bible reading. I'm studying about the book of Exodus, about all the design of the tabernacle and the measurements and the way it's supposed to be done. And then the high priest's robes and all of that. And it's heavy reading to me. I don't know if some of you just breeze through that like a storybook, but for me it's not exactly that way. But all of that is to help us understand the reality and pointing forward to Christ, the great high priest, the one who would offer himself. He himself hath suffered being tempted. And I wish sometimes it would shed just a bit more light on that. What that 40 days in the wilderness actually looked like. What that temptation and the temptations that he faced through his teenage years, through his 20s, and through his upper 20s and into his ministry. All that. It'd be interesting if the Bible would spend a bit more time focusing on that temptation that he felt and how it went for him and how he overcame it. It would be interesting if we could know more of that. Hebrews chapter 4 verse 14. Seeing then that we have a great high priest that is passed under the heavens, Jesus the Son of God, let us hold fast our profession. Hold it fast. For we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was on all points tempted, like as we are, yet without sin. Let us therefore come boldly unto the throne of grace, that we may obtain mercy and find grace to help in time of need. And we're feeling tonight that we really have some things to take care of. There's really something not so good. Let's come to the throne of grace tonight. Let's find grace to help in time of need. Because Jesus knows what it's. He's been there, done that, in the sense that he was in all points tempted, yet without sin. Then I wanted to read over in chapter 5 yet, first three verses, continuing our reading. For every high priest taken from among men is ordained for men in things pertaining to God, that he may offer both gifts and sacrifices for sins. Who can have compassion on the ignorant and on them that are turned out of the way? For that he himself also is compassed with infirmity. And by reason hereof, he ought, as for the people, so also for himself to offer for sins. And no man taketh this honor unto himself, but he that is called of God, as was Aaron. So also Christ glorified not himself to be made an high priest, but he that said unto him, Thou art my son, today have I begotten thee. And then, of course, it goes on speaking about he learned obedience by the things which he suffered. And then verse 9, and being made perfect, became the author of eternal salvation unto all them that obey him. And I trust that that part of that group of people that obey him is present here tonight. I trust that that's the way it is. Lord, is it I? And I'd just like us to focus our attention tonight, not so much on that one and that one and that one. And part of this thing of pride is we tend to look at those that are plainer than us, and they probably sometimes we have a little judgmental attitude about that. This is all part of what I've been thinking about and hearing about recently and some of the teaching I've been listening to. And we look at some that maybe aren't as plain as we are, and we think, wow, you know, we have our feelings about that stuff, and somehow we feel that we're just right in the middle of the road. And you know what? The best thing is to focus on the measure of the stature, the fullness of Christ, and see where that tendency is, and within my own heart, to be tantalized by that which is forbidden. That, and watch ourselves in that unguarded hour to forget my pledge to own your power and then deny identity with one who gave his life for me. The tendency to compromise in small things. May God help us tonight to think about these realities. I know it's not a long message, but it is what was on my heart. And we'll just let the Spirit of God take it from there. May God bless each one of you. And I just trust that if there's anyone here tonight that's having a challenging time, that we can find the help that we need to be victorious and live for Jesus and be faithful. Because I'm telling you, my friends, we just don't want to have too much impurity in that cup of water. That water right there is good to drink. It's good to drink right now, but it doesn't take much till it's not fit to drink. Just a couple sweepings from off the floor, a couple cobwebs from around the corners, if there are any, we wouldn't want to drink it anymore. Is my life as pure and clean, or is there dirt in it? Lord, is it I? God knows. His Spirit knows. This is the burden of my heart. May God add his blessing.